Hi, everyone, and welcome to Remaking Tomorrow, a series of conversations about the future of teaching and learning. I'm Ryan Rudzewski, here with Greg Baer, and we're the co-authors of When You Wonder, You're Learning, Mr. Rogers' Enduring Lessons for Raising Creative, Curious, Caring Kids.
This is a podcast powered by Remake Learning, a network that ignites engaging and relevant learning in support of young people navigating rapid social and technological change.
On today's episode, we're talking with Sarah Sneed, President and CEO of the NEA Foundation. The NEA Foundation is a Washington, D.C.-based nonprofit working to promote the absolute best in public education. Sarah, welcome to Remaking Tomorrow.
Thank you so much. It's just a pleasure to be with you today.
Sarah, we feel like the lucky ones talking about the absolute best in public education. So I'm going to start with the most softball of questions. Tell us about the NEA Foundation and the absolute best in public education.
Thank you so very much, Greg. On my favorite topic, of course. So the NEA Foundation, as said at the intro, is a national nonprofit and philanthropic organization. We are located in Washington, D.C. We are 57 years old. We were born out of the NEA, the National Education Association, some 55 years ago and then became independent. We remain close partners with the NEA. We do many things, but they fall essentially into three categories. Firstly, we invest in educators' leadership. We see it as absolutely essential that educators are receiving more support, and we make it our business to lend them that in many different ways. We have grant programs and so forth to support their shared learning and collaboration. I'd like to get into more of that later. We support partnerships where educators are at the table helping to support creative thinking and innovation and the furtherance of best practices, demonstrations of best practices in partnership with others. And then we also support improvements in education policy and practice.
And you know, you just used a word, Sarah, that I want to pause and highlight, because anyone who knows you, anyone who knows your organization, it becomes clear that you all are enthusiasts for partnerships, for authentic partnerships. So that's policymakers, students, parents, educators, you name it. And I'm wondering, can you talk a little bit about what do authentic partnerships look like in your work? And how does the NEA Foundation go about supporting those partnerships?
Anything we propose to do can only be done through partnership. It's a false narrative, I think, in this country. It's a false expectation that educators alone are going to be able to bring out the very best in a child and in schools. Children bring their whole selves to school. And that means that if a child is hungry, if a child comes to school and cannot see the board, can't hear, is troubled by something that has happened at home or in neighborhood, we're kidding ourselves if we think it's about the best curriculum or the very best educator. Schools and educators need partnerships so that the myriad of needs that kids have and the myriad of things going on in community can be addressed to support student learning and student success. It's one of the reasons why the NEA Foundation invests so heavily in community schools, which I'll talk more about in a minute, but just on the principle of partnership, fundamentally, it's got to be contextualized. It can't be some abstraction that is idealized, but rather true partnerships begin when there is true understanding of the partners' needs, circumstances, constraints, contexts, history. Without those understandings, we approach this practice of partnership from, you know, the point of program implementation or an ideas execution. And without that contextual frame, it's going to falter. Also, of course, building trust and relationship between the potential partners before the work begins. You know, I share with my partners, I want you to get to know these neighborhoods. I want you to get to know these communities. I want us to drive through the neighborhoods where these schools are situated so that you can see the conditions in which these children are coming to school and having life experience, going to some of the cultural and community sites, restaurants and such, to have casual conversation with persons with whom we will be working. Why? Because we're beginning to build relationship and trust. You know, there's history preceding any and everything you might think and do in this country. And so without those contextual understandings, partnerships won't really flourish. If you're going to have an effective partnership, I think it has to be surrounded by grace. And by that, I mean allowing missteps and forgiveness and starting again and rethinking and remixing and coming up with new solutions and really staying in the moment with that expression of grace, one partner toward another.
Sarah, people make partnerships, and among those people are teachers. And that's where you started in describing the NEA Foundation and investing in educators and investing in educators as the leaders, the brilliant leaders they are.
Yes.
And so I imagine all sorts of teachers and educators are coming to the NEA Foundation because you offer such a wonderful array of fellowships and grants. I noticed, for example, the Global Learning Fellowship, whereby educators get an opportunity for a 10-day international field study to study a public education system elsewhere. Can you talk a little bit about these fellowships and awards and what they mean to the people, the teachers, whom you're privileged to support?
Yes, we offer an array of supports and resources and opportunities for educators, educational champions, and educationally focused organizations. And so we have what I call our legacy programs, the first of which is our grants to educators. We are one of the few organizations in this country that will invest in individual educators so that they have an opportunity to explore their own ideas and to innovate in their classrooms. They're the ones who know the children best, aside from the parents and caretakers. The educators are day-to-day with students. They know what excites their classroom, what their classroom needs. And so last year, I think we gave a total of 202 grants to individual educators to do the most amazing things. We also have, as you mentioned, a Global Learning Fellowship. A lot of educators don't have opportunity to get out of their neighborhood, their community, their state, and yet we're living in a global community now. Increasingly, and I think very obvious, we are living in a very global context. And so it's important that students understand that and what that means for, you know, the things they can do in the world, the things they can bring and contribute. And that comes to their educators. So educators need opportunities to be exposed to thinking about globalization, global community. The Global Learning Fellowship engages about 50 educators a year in a year-long fellowship experience. It's very prestigious. It's a competitive process for which folks apply and explore. This year, for instance, we're going to South Africa. 47 educators will be on that trip, exploring and comparing and contrasting educational history and current practice between South Africa and the United States.
This is Greg Baer, here with Ryan Rudzeski, and we're talking with Sarah Sneed, President and CEO of the NEA Foundation.
Sarah, the educators listening in might know the NEA Foundation for the work it does to uplift and celebrate teachers. And one example of this work is the Salute to Excellence in Education Gala, better known as the Academy Awards of Education. We love that name. Can you tell us about that night? Who's honored and what might attendees see, hear, feel, experience?
You know, it's very, very hard, as you might imagine, but there will be an exemplar per state that is celebrated with different awards that we offer during this gala, which happens in February of each year. We also will celebrate alongside those exemplary educators, persons and organizations that are making substantial contributions to the best in public education. And we have a Student Voice Award, which we've added in the past 5 years, because, of course, very importantly, students also should express agency and be contributors to change and opportunity in their local contexts. I often will say to folks that 56% of this nation's Black children reside in what is called the Deep South. And the Deep South is the fastest growing region of this country. It also is the most diverse part of this country. You know, so what then do you think is the level of philanthropy that makes it to the Deep South? And the tragic answer to that question is 3%. 3%. We don't even have good data for what is the level of philanthropic investment in Arkansas, Louisiana, and Mississippi. But if you were to visit those states, as I did with these partners, you will see that it is a travesty that there is not more education, philanthropy. So our board decided this will be where we make a particular demonstration of what it means to do education, justice, equity, excellence, and opportunity work. And we did so through the launch of community schools. In the Deep South, when we began this investment, there were no community schools, as in zero, in the state of Arkansas, and none in Mississippi. There was only one in Louisiana, and it was slated for closure that same year. I'm really, really proud to say that there are now 27 community schools in the region, and we are growing, and we have made a particular focus on supporting the development of community schools in the Delta, the Arkansas and Mississippi Delta.
And so, Sarah, when you think about that commitment in the Delta, and you described the circumstances that brought you to that place, do you see potential for the work that you're doing in the Delta to springboard to other geographic pockets or areas of need in this country?
You know, at the beginning, we talked about best practices and we talked about partnership. And now we're talking about community schools, and it's all the same conversation, Greg. Schools become community schools through the practice of partnership. It's, you know, where a school district determines that it can enhance and support student learning and student success. The breadth of what happens in a community school is limited only by the breadth of imagination and the resources that are in a geography. And yet we have seen now through this practice of partnership how absenteeism is reduced and behavioral incidents are reduced and academic performance improves because these needs that children have coming to school are addressed and they feel loved and cared for and embraced by their whole community in the child's experience. The first thing we want is joy. We're looking for the joy and learning, the joy of coming to school, being in school, experiencing school. You know, that's what we're looking at, the culture first. And then we build from there all these resources, supports, and opportunities. This is what all schools should look like. So this demonstration we're making in the Deep South, we believe has applicability in terms of what schools can and should look like around this country. It's interesting that when community schools are developed, usually it's because a community leader, a principal, an administrative leader of a school district will decide, let's have community schools, and then they'll start to build from there. And typically a table will be built, and it will be an ever-expanding table where you have more and more partners coming to bring resources, supports, and opportunities to kids and community. But guess who tends not to be at the table? Teachers. Around the country, community schools don't always have teachers in leadership roles. And so we have a partnership with the Spencer Foundation through which we are giving grants to educators in community schools to demonstrate if they were given opportunity to lead in the design and execution of the strategy, what would they distinctly bring? And our aim is that at the end of this project, we will be able to codify what were the opportunities, what were the impediments to teachers having leadership roles in community schools.
See, I have a similar question as Greg. So I'm a former educator myself. I taught fourth and fifth grade in the state of Louisiana. And I love hearing you talk about the grant opportunities and the gala, because I know from experience that educators go about that daily work, often with joy, but often still without fanfare, without celebration, certainly without support. I still remember I was fresh out of college, and I remember learning for the first time that people in other professions had expense accounts. And that just shocked me as a teacher.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I love hearing you talk about all these supports you have for individual teachers. And I'm wondering if you can talk about how these opportunities lift the profession as a whole. How did those little points of light add up to what we started with earlier, you know, the best of public education?
We've got to be honest about what is actually happening in education right now and affecting teachers so profoundly. Why are these opportunities so critical? It's because there are just so many heavy weights on teachers and public schools in this country. We're facing, you know, significant teacher shortages, high turnover among teachers due to stress and low pay and workload. And at the same time, we've got fewer people entering the profession. And then we have specific hotspots where the teacher shortage issue is particularly pronounced. You know, you think about someone gets into teaching, they're excited about what they're going to be able to bring to students. And then they confront all these challenges, the stress and so forth. Opportunities to, you know, spread your wings and explore your ideas and do your thing and travel and have a peer group of educators around the country who, like you, are visionary and excited, makes a world of difference. A lot of educators feel isolated, and I'm amazed. We, for instance, when we do our global learning trip, everyone who's on the trip will be on a WhatsApp, okay? It amazes me that I can go back to the day I started my first year 7 years ago, and the WhatsApp group that went on that global learning trip is as vibrant today as it was the day they went on the trip. Why? Because these teachers found among themselves community and a place to plug in and problem solve and hear from peers and get support. That happened through the NEA Foundation's efforts. It's important that they have support because, you know, the funding inequities that are so pronounced in education, ultimately, who feels that day to day? Of course, the policymakers, of course, the administrators, but the teachers as well. I can't tell you the number of teachers, our awardees, for instance, at the gala, at the Salute to Excellence in Education gala, who, you know, they tell me their stories and they talk about the funds they took out of their own pockets just to be able to provide their students with support. You know, other things that are weighing on teachers that we're attempting to address is tech gaps. I think people say more often the digital divide. You know, around the country, there are these gross inequities with respect to who has access and who does not. The last thing, of course, weighing on teachers, which we don't have the capacity to address except in coalition with others through policy efforts, is this issue of school safety, school shootings and violence. And the needs are manifold and supersede what the NEA Foundation singularly can do. But we can be contributors to helping folks think about what is it the teachers are wrestling with.
Sarah, public education is lucky to have you as a champion in this country. And in this conversation, you've talked so much about teachers, about the profession, about communities like the Delta. We want to close the conversation by talking about you. And so we close this conversation with what we call the lightning round. So I have a couple questions for you. The first things that come to your mind, brief, quick answers in response to these unexpected things I'm about to ask you. You ready to play?
Yeah.
All right, Sarah. You are an ordained clergywoman. Yes. Holding a Master's of Divinity from Yale Divinity School. How does your identity as a clergywoman inform your work as the executive of the NEA Foundation?
I think everything that one does in life is inspired by one of two motivators, either love or fear. And there's too much that is happening in education, public education, in communities that is fear-driven. And everything I do, I seek to do from a place of love and for the furtherance of love and the expression of love. The love I have for children, the love I have for teachers, you know, that came, my mother was a teacher, so I grew up loving teachers. Accordingly, it is an integral, intrinsic aspect of my everyday. Since you asked, I'll just say this lastly. There is a scripture that guides my life, and it is Micah 6:8. And I come from a Christian context and pluralist in my outlook, but my own outlook is Christian. And Micah 6:8 says, "What is it that the Lord requires of you?" And the answer comes, "But to do justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God." That's it for me. That's everything. Justice, mercy, walk humbly.
Sarah, one of the subjects that you studied as an undergraduate at Mount Holyoke College was music. Can you tell us about a piece of music that maybe changed your life?
Oh, wow. What a great question. I would say Bolero. Well, I don't know, Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto No. 2. It's a tie. Both of those pieces take one through the entirety of life experience, and that there are moments where it seems that all may be lost, and yet there is recovery and restoration and then joy. But I love the crescendo of each of those and the glorious finish. I hope my life is like that.
All right. So, Sarah, before we go, just one more question. What's one thing that parents and educators can do today to make tomorrow a more promising place for every learner?
Get involved. Understand you have power. You have voice. You can be a contributor. You can be a contributor through volunteerism. You can be a contributor on your school board, running for school board, by expressing your interest and concern. There's room and there's a need for each and every one of us who cares about the future of this country and our democracy to understand that children are at the heart of it all. It is not trite, it is true that they are our future. And if you believe that, find a way to support a child, support children, support schools. There's something everybody can do.
Thank you so much to Sarah Sneed, President and CEO of the NEA Foundation. Remaking Tomorrow is powered by Remake Learning. Learn more at remakelearning.org.